order, I know that Ken's en route, and we'll wait for Ken, which is just going to be about 5 minutes. So we'll start with some quick business to get it, to get it off the plate.
Yeah?
Oh, you did? Okay, good. So we should be here in 10 seconds. Can I get a motion to accept the minutes from last month's meeting? Okay. Second, nervous. All in favor? Any discussion? Aye. Okay. And we'll move, just until Ken, we'll move to the one resolution for tonight, which is resolution number 71 in the packet, like half the minute. And it's the appropriation for soil and water district, which has been held pending budget, so if we can get a motion to accept that. A second.
Okay.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. All right. I'm very happy to introduce our guests, Mark Dielking and Joe Dilsendako, who have had a busy travel day. But I'm very grateful for at such last notice, late notice, you coming and joining us tonight. And the floor is yours.
Great. Should I just go through the presentation, or why don't I just give you a little bit of background?
I think that would be great. Yeah.
I'm treasurer and managing director of the Energy Improvement Corporation. My background within New York State from a governmental perspective is I was started my governmental career as a councilman in the town of Bedford and later became supervisor in the town of Bedford. I then spent the latter part of the 1980s and early 90s in the Empire State Development Corporation as the COO there. And I left government, went back into the private sector, and from 2004 to 2010 was chief financial officer of the New York Power Authority. So I spent a lot of time on economic development, on the energy and environmental side. Ironically, one of the things that I was interested in doing at the Power Authority is introducing a form of financing which has become available from the federal government and then was authorized by the state of New York called PACE, which is something we're going to talk about, Property Assessed Clean Energy. And the Power Authority was prohibited from doing that. The legislature really allowed the Power Authority to finance energy efficiency projects primarily for government and for schools, for not-for-profit schools, for religious schools, and for economic development customers. But there was a huge market that was not being served, and I thought PACE would be an ideal product to serve that market. And it was very ironic that the town of Bedford actually went forward and created a local development corporation called the Energy Improvement Corporation. And the segue is that Mark was one of the people who initiated that program and got it going. So here I am now talking about PACE with my roots with Bedford and my similarity with the Power Authority. So it's been an interesting experience. Mark, you can talk a little bit about your background.
I'm the chairman of the board of the Energy Improvement Corporation, and my background is I worked for many years with the U.S. Investment Bank and worked on energy, carbon issues, financing really, energy efficiency projects through the banking systems that we developed. And back in 2007, when financing came on the scene, we actually just committed to $1 billion of capital to an energy upgrade program that the Clean Climate Initiative was related to NEPCO, Energy Service Company. And I was looking at that saying, you're committing $1 billion of capital to really a very not so great credit, and here's PACE, which is a tremendous credit, offering much cheaper capital. And so, long story short, I got to work with a number of people within Northern Westchester. It was the Northern Westchester Energy Action Consortium, who wrote a grant to essentially scale up an entity that would be able to do PACE financing in behalf of municipalities if they wanted to take advantage of the New York State law. So the idea was to have a shared service enterprise do this in behalf of these municipalities so that not each municipality has to create their own program all over again, taking advantage of that law. So That's my long story short, and the I guess we'll dive into the presentation.
I'll take you through the presentation and introduce you to the Energy Improvement Corporation. We are a public benefit corporation, an LDC, authorized under the state. We are basically required to comply with all of the rules of any other authority in the state of New York, and so we're responsive to the authority's budget office. We have provided some assistance for residential projects, residential initiatives, but our core, the ability to finance projects, is limited to commercial. So what we are really is more advisory to residential and helping them deal with entity organizations like NYSERDA or some of the utilities in New York State that help provide upgrades for residential properties. But from an Energy Improvement Corporation standpoint, from a financing standpoint, we are limited to commercial buildings. So we can do residential, but it has to be commercially owned. And typically that's more of a multi-family owned up. Our funding to date has been provided by a combination of grants from NYSERDA and from the Department of Energy. We are now at a point where we're going to be beginning to do project financing, and as we do that, we will be earning revenues and be ultimately self-sustaining. We anticipate that by 2015 we'll be on a standalone basis from that standpoint of being self-sustaining. We are in a position where we can finance any form of energy efficiency and renewable energy project. So many of the projects that we're talking about deal with traditional energy efficiency, some of them dealing with solar. We've had some combinations of dealing with wind, but these they can be combined. So you can be doing a traditional energy efficiency project, and you could be also be doing a renewable project, or you could be doing just pure renewable, whether it's solar or wind. Energy Enterprise New York Finance is the product, and that's what we're providing. And we feel as though this is very important, because what I learned in the time that I was with the Power Authority, and what we've also learned recently, is that most of the buildings that need to be upgraded need to have some form of financing available to them that in many cases is of a long-term nature. Because many times, like lighting and other initiatives are relatively quick payback, but when you really get into the deep upgrades that are necessary in the building to make it as energy efficient as possible, you don't have that fast payback that you would have in certain initiatives. So what we do is we provide an opportunity for projects to be financed on a long-term basis, and we'll talk about that a little bit more in detail. But typically, a project can go as far as 15 years for financing, and that makes a huge difference in the ability of the building to be able to experience the kind of upgrades that it needs to experience. So it's sort of a new way to upgrade the commercial building, and our market is again, I said, pretty much everything that is not residential. We see office and retail being major segments. And projects that have been done for PACE around the country, office space seems to be the most prevalent. But we also see an opportunity to provide services to not-for-profit. We're doing a lot of work right now with NYSERDA on multifamily. So it's very broad. The opportunity here is very broad. But at the moment, experiences that we've seen around the country, and also experiences we've seen in Connecticut, which has been very aggressive in PACE, office seems to be the largest market at the moment. PACE, we've used that acronym a few times already, but for those of you who don't know what it means, it's property assessed clean energy, and that is the definition. It was passed in New York State in 2009 to allow municipalities in New York State to be able to provide for opportunities to do energy efficiency projects and have them financed. And the way it works is the loans that we provide are repaid through a line on a tax bill. So if a property owner wants to do an energy efficiency project under PACE, we provide all of the cash necessary, the capital necessary to pay for it. But then it's paid back through a line on a tax bill. So that's where hence the property assessed clean energy comes from. And it's a senior lien on the property, just like all of the other liens on the tax bill. Yes.
When a property changes hands, if it isn't paid off, Is that the obligation of the seller, or does it remain with the buyer?
Actually, that's the next line on the chart. It remains with the property upon sale or transfer. So we consider that to be a significant benefit from it. It doesn't have to be accelerated. So if it's a 15-year transaction, it stays with the property. So if the property is sold, the lien continues with the property, and the new owner of the property pays it just like they would pay any other lines on the tax bill.
Is there the opportunity to pay the law?
No. You can't. That's under the law, you cannot accelerate the loan.
Does it pay off at cost, or is your interest in it?
Well, it's a traditional financing. It's an interest, you know, it's a loan that has that carries obviously a line of an interest rate depending upon the time in which it's financed. But there is no opportunity to prepay, and there's no opportunity to accelerate the payments.
Mm-hmm. It's as if you're improving your property for water or sewer improvements. You know, if you opt into a water extension of a water district, you can't prepay that assessment.
Now, again, some of the benefits to PACE, which is, I think, are very important is, you know, we have very strict underwriting standards, which I'll touch upon, but it's based on, number one, the ability of the property to be able to carry the tax bill. You know, that's number one. Again, as I talked about, long repayment terms, which is very unique, because commercial loans typically for projects like this pretty much run about 5 years. So by law, you can go out as long as 20. We're sort of focusing on 15 years as sort of the length of time in which we'd like to finance the project. The interest rates are what we believe is very attractive, particularly as it relates to long-term financing. And many of the community goals that I think we're trying to achieve here are important. But what I look at here, which I think is really important from an economic development standpoint, which is another aspect as well, is the environmental benefit. We are creating jobs as a result of this, because we are creating an opportunity for these projects to be developed, and we're hiring trades in order to do the work. But another aspect which I'll touch upon is these projects, when they're financed, have to be cash flow positive, meaning that the repayment on the debt has to be less than the energy savings associated with the project. So from day one, the property owner is actually saving money even though they're taking on this financing. The benefit, as I see it, is also there's an economic benefit because we're keeping the money within the community. So it's not just job creation, but it's creating additional funding in the community for other forms of economic development activity. So we really see this as not just an environmental product, but we're also seeing it as a very significant economic development project as well. Now, property assessed clean energy is not unique. It's been something that's moved across the country. California, not surprisingly, has taken a very aggressive lead on property assessed clean energy. The state of Florida has been aggressive as well. And as I mentioned before, our neighboring state of Connecticut has been very aggressive in moving their project forward. They've had the good fortune of having the state of Connecticut put $20 million of state money into the project. So the state of Connecticut is actually not only funding the administrative costs, but also providing money day one to finance the projects, which is one of the reasons why I think Connecticut has jumped ahead of many other people in advancing PACE. In New York, we've been fortunate to get help from NYSERDA. We've been fortunate to get help from the DOE. But we have to go out now and identify opportunities in the capital market to provide funding. And we do have established a line of credit with First Niagara Bank. The First Niagara will be the entity that will be providing the funds for financing initiatives. But in the long run, as I'll explain later on, we'll be going into the capital market to issue bonds to cover the costs of investment in these projects. Now, what's very important in relationship to EIC is that a property owner in New York State has to be in a municipality that's a member of the Energy Improvement Corporation. I'll talk a little bit about some of our existing members, but for example, in Ulster County, the county would have to be a member of EIC, and the city of Kingston would have to be a member of EIC. And the reason why I say that is because the requirement is the municipality has to have lien authority and enforcement authority over the property in the event of a non-payment of taxes. So the entity has to be able to foreclose on a property if the property owner doesn't pay. That's the reason why the city of Kingston has to be a member as well as the county, because the city has that power. So even if Ulster County were to join, the city would still have to join to participate in the program. But the city could opt to join if the county doesn't want to. So there is an option to go either way. But it's very important that the municipality, having the taxing authority and the foreclosure authority, the lien authority, if you will, over that property, be a member of the Energy Improvement Corporation.
Okay, so for the town,
previously when I was in Suffolk County, I had a lot of experience through the Suffolk County Department of the Environment and Tom Savalon and others with the Pace Funds, and there's a lot of problems on the residential side with putting systems on properties that really don't hold a lot of value. But on the commercial side is what we're talking about. But essentially, any commercial venture outside of the city of Kingston would be eligible if the city of Kingston did not.
That's right.
We don't, any village or city where we don't enforce the building use, it would not be
eligible. As far as I know, I mean, we may be wrong, but I think in Ulster County, the city of Kingston is the only municipal entity that has that kind of...
I believe we have agreements with the village.
Now, the way that the municipality would become a member and join EIC is, frankly, I think it's a very simple process. But the way it works, it pretty much starts in meetings like this, and for disclosure purposes, we have met with Commissioner Doyle, we've met with Deputy Commissioner White, we haven't had any follow-up since then. But the way the system would work is typically there are meetings like this with elements of the county board of legislators, with the executive staff, and if there is interest to continue to go forward, there typically is a work session of members of the entire board or committee of the board and with the executive staff. And if the decision is made to go forward, then typically what happens is a public hearing is held where the public has an opportunity to comment on what is being proposed. And then once that public hearing takes place, then the board would act and pass a local law. And then that local law would authorize the county executive to be able to send a letter to EIC asking to become a member of the EIC board, and then the EIC board would act upon it and they would become a member. So from a time frame standpoint, the quickest we've had is a 6-week process where a town board was interested in becoming a member. We went through that process and it was very quick. Ironically, the longest we've had was Orange County, and that was 3 months. Which I think is actually pretty good. And the only reason why Orange County dragged on a little bit, if I can use that expression, is because the county executive was ill at the time, and there was some health issues that were going on, which slowed the process down. But Orange County has become a member. And right now, they are the only county that's a member of the EIC. All of the other members are either towns, cities, or villages.
Can a town, is it just,
I think,
Ulster County said they don't do it. Could a local town do it?
No, they have to have a lien authority over the property.
So in Westchester, these towns have lien authority over the property?
Westchester County is the only county in the state of New York that's split.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Well, it's a sensitive subject to me. The thing with council, the supervisor kind of hated making the county whole. Yeah. Well, it's sort of envious. Westchester is unique. Okay. The only county in New York where that's split.
To make a bigger point, in Westchester County, the town sends the county for.
Yeah, exactly.
Question, you mentioned in here that you're taking a senior lien position, which means that you have to get the current mortgage holder to agree to go behind you, right?
They're not really behind us in a traditional sense. The answer to your question number one is we do seek lender approval. So if we are going to provide PACE financing to a property in Ulster County, one of the requirements is we would go to that property owner's bank, if there was a bank involved in the sale of the lien, and explain to them that we're going to go forward with this project, and we want them to accept that. And we, no surprises here. We don't want to create a problem for the community. We don't want to create a problem for the property owner. So we do seek lender approval.
Has that been an issue?
It hasn't been an issue nationally. I mean, there has been some resistance on the part of the banks, but it has not been a problem. It has not been an impediment. I think the reason why is twofold. Number one, because we're making this investment, we're actually enhancing the value of the collateral associated with the financing. So that's point number one. Point number two, as I mentioned before, which we'll talk about in our underwriting standards, you've got to be cash flow positive. So what you're doing, if I'm looking at it from the bank's perspective, what you've just done is you've increased the value of my collateral, and you've done it in such a way that the mortgagee is actually better off financially than they were before.
Let me ask this another way. I'm in the real estate business, so I'm taking
a little bit. We've always allowed a lot of students in the committee. In this committee, we've always allowed a lot of students.
So
we'll move it along somewhere.
This is the last question on this.
Okay.
Does it impair a buyer? Someone's looking to buy a property that has this lien on it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any experience of whether it impairs the ability to sell because when a mortgagor is looking at it fresh, they're looking at it with a position ahead?
Nationally, that has not been the case. And the way I look at it from my own perspective is that you're now marketing the value of the property. So yes, I mean, there is the obligation to pay to accept the line on the tax bill for X amount of years. But what you're actually doing now is you're marketing a more valuable piece of real estate. So I think it actually enhances the value of the property as opposed to it becoming an impediment.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, the lending criteria, as I talked about, is very traditional from the standpoint of underwriting standards. I'll just put the checklist for you here. But one of the things that is very critical that I have touched on before is the ability to be cash flow positive. And, you know, we think that element is very important. The next page is a list of the current members of EIC. As you can see, most of them are towns, cities, in one case, a village in Westchester County. And then, and again, in the case of Orange County, they're the first county to be involved. And we have discussions now with Ulster County. We were speaking with Onondaga County and the city of Syracuse earlier this morning. Surrey County and Buffalo have expressed an interest. We've had conversations with Broome County. What we're doing now is we spent a lot of time working on this in Westchester County for the reason I talked about before, and that's that each one of the municipalities has to become a member. So Westchester County has really been trying to do this. Ironically, there are probably about as many municipalities in Westchester County that would individually have to join EIC as there are counties in the state of New York. So it's been a pretty time-consuming process, but we're moving that very aggressively and moving forward with that. The next chart deals with the flow of cash as it relates to the marketplace. And as you can see, what the Energy Improvement Corporation does is obtain financing from the capital markets. Traditionally, in most cases, it would be through the issuance of bonds. And then the Energy Improvement Corporation's funding actually pays the property owner once the property owner has the project been completed. And our partner, through legislation, is NYSERDA. So what would happen in a situation like this is that the Energy Improvement Corporation would provide the money to the property owner once NYSERDA confirms that the project has been completed consistent with the expectation and the design that was set forth as part of the energy efficiency and renewable energy project. And then the special tax charge is placed on the tax bill. The receiver receives those taxes when they receive taxes for all of the other items. And then that money goes to our trustee, and that money actually goes back into the capital market. Now, an important provision here is that the municipality pledges the payment to EIC, just like it pledges the payment to a school district, or a fire district, or a water district, or a park district. That aspect is very important as it relates to PACE, is because what makes PACE unique in the marketplace. In fact, the investors in these bonds take a significant degree of comfort in the fact that it's not only based on the creditworthiness of the property owner, but it's also based on the municipal trust, which is very important in the bond market. Now, again, I'm very sensitive to this as a councilman and a supervisor because I know what this is like to make these pledges. But we have taken steps to inoculate the municipality from any full loss. And the way it works is this. If, let's say, for example, a property owner does not pay. The only remedy available to the municipality is to take title to the property through some form of in rem procedure and foreclose on the property. If for any reason at all the municipality was to sustain a loss, meaning that it did not collect enough money to recover those unpaid taxes, we have set up a loan loss reserve fund to protect the municipality from any permanent loss. So if there was a negative tax collection, if you will, we would make sure that the municipality was made whole. We do the same with the investors in the bonds. So what we're saying to the bondholder is that if for any reason at all, and there have not been any problems like this in New York State, but if there was a municipal failure, or if municipality failed to make good on its obligation, the reserve fund would also protect the bondholder. So we've got the bondholder protected, we've got the municipality protected, and right now we have a little over $1 million in that reserve fund. And we will continue to add to that reserve fund as we continue to do financings around New York State. So we believe we've taken every precaution we can to not sort of create, you know, almost sort of an unfunded mandate, if you will, to the municipality. So when the municipality becomes a member and helps us to make these financings available, we're recognizing that there was some degree of risk that they took, but we have the reserve funds in place to protect them for many losses. So again, this sort of brings the whole program together. You know, we see this as a program that helps municipalities build on the environmental goals that they have, facilitates economic development opportunities, the environmental benefits, and again, you know, the final point is that the reserves are there to protect the municipality. So again, in this case, we believe that everyone benefits from the program. It's to me, I guess I'm a little biased, but I think this is truly a win-win situation for everybody. I also wanted to introduce you to something that we're doing right now in Westchester County. There is a product called a QECB, and I don't know if you're all familiar with that. So it's a Qualified Energy Conservation Bond. This was a program that the federal government initiated during the Bush administration. And what was Bush administration?
Never heard of era.
Sure. And what happened is the federal government allocated to all of the states, and specifically to large cities and counties in each state, the ability to issue bonds to invest in energy efficiency and renewable energy projects and have the federal government subsidize a very significant portion of the interest associated with those bonds. When the program was originally conceived, the federal government was going to subsidize about 70% of the bonds. Right now, with some of the budget negotiations that are going on in Washington, we really don't know where that percentage is going to fall out, but we need somewhere between 50 to 70% of the interest costs associated with the bonds. There's a finite amount of money available within all of the counties and cities in New York State. In the case of Westchester County, they have $8 million in QECB bond capacity available to them. This, as far as we know, this is the only situation like this has happened in the country, but what Westchester County has done is basically allocated the authority to issue those bonds to us. And what the county has asked us to do is focus on affordable housing and not-for-profits in Westchester County. So we have this program in place right now. We're working with the affordable housing developers and owners in Westchester County and with the not-for-profits in Westchester County. And as you can see on the product comparison chart, the QECBs would, at the moment, based on current market conditions, if someone would undertake, for example, a 15-year financing, which is a very long-term financing, they would be able to enjoy a bottom-line interest rate of a little over 4%, which for money of that long-term is really attractive. Ulster County has some capacity here.
$9 million.
So We believe that there is a real opportunity here for Westchester County to take advantage of a program similar to the program we designed in Westchester County. How you would allocate that authority is really your decision. Westchester, for whatever reason, right or wrong, has decided to focus on affordable housing and not-for-profits. It can be used for any purpose whatsoever, as long as it's energy efficiency and renewables. It has to be energy conservation. That is the criteria. But if it goes to any market at all, except for residential, because again, you can't do PACE as it relates to residential. So we think that's a very exciting opportunity. There's also an argument that you might be interested in. We took a look at the market for the Mid-Hudson. Now, we haven't broken down, obviously, Ulster County. But as you can see from this chart, there are almost 40,000 multifamily buildings that were qualified for PACE financing, and over 25,000 commercial and industrial buildings. And the reason why we think this chart is so important is because it's showing how much money could be spent upgrading buildings in the Mid-Hudson, and also how much would be freed up in the way of cash for reinvestment in the community. And bottom line is how important it could be in regard to job creation. So we really think that this program has enormous benefits, not only from an environmental standpoint, but from an economic development standpoint. This slide, EIC's approach is basically gives you some sense of the staffing within EIC. We're not very top-heavy. We don't really have a very significant administrative cost. We really don't need a lot of people to manage this program. It can be done very efficiently as we access the capital markets. So we think this team that's in place will be able to support activities on a statewide basis. So we're ready to get started with programs within Ulster County and the City of Kingston, assuming the county and the city were interested in going forward. Everything is in place, ready to go. I mean, the QECDs would be something we'd want to talk to you about in more detail. But if the county decided to become a member, the capital is in place right now for us to begin to do projects very quickly.
Questions from the committee?
I think it's great. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, forgive me, I came in a little bit late. So when the individual takes out the loan, I guess it would be essentially for the equipment, we would then levy on their tax bill an additional amount based upon the repayment, correct?
What would happen is that it's a level payment, so whether it's 5 years, 10 years, or 15 years, what would happen is once the deal closed, once we provided the funding, then what we would do is we would provide the information to the receiver to explain how much has to be added to the bill. In the case of Orange County, they wanted 90 days notice. So basically what they've asked us is to give us that information within 90 days of the time that they're printing the bills. So what would happen is that line would be added to the tax bill. We would provide we do all of the services, all the receiver receives is a list of what property has this amount of money added to the bill. And then when the receiver collects the taxes, then they would have to pool all of the funds that were being made for payments through the EIC program. And then they would cut a check to the trustee.
Okay.
So we look at it as, and we don't see it as a variable cost. We really see it as something that could be covered in a fixed cost. And we don't see it as a terribly burdensome administrative process.
Right. That's not what I'm concerned about. What I'm concerned about for us is the tax cap and whether the state comptroller would add this to the tax cap or not.
We've checked that, and that's not the case.
Okay.
Yeah, so this is exempt from the 2%.
Okay.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You have multifamily homes if you're in an LLC. Does that count as commercial?
Yes, absolutely.
I got a couple of very inefficient ones.
Well, yeah, it's important that you say that, because that actually has been... But that's been a topic of conversation with a lot of the members. That is one of the market segments that I think they're the most interested in. From the standpoint of smaller multifamily to larger, it came up in our conversations with the City of White Plains and the City of New Rochelle. There's a lot of large, old housing stuff that they really want to upgrade. Some of them want to upgrade from you know, oil to get natural gas, and they want to upgrade from 6 to down to 2. There's some real opportunities to take advantage of that type of program. And not to mention lighting and windows and insulation and roofs and other things that have a much longer payback. So combining, you know, the sort of the low-hanging fruit with some of these other more complicated projects makes this that much more desirable.
Yeah.
So it really helps address the, what we're calling is the deep energy upgrades for the building. You know, making the building more efficient is what we're trying to accomplish.
The last question I have, just going back to the tax cap question, do you have documentation that from the state comptroller's office at all that shows that it's exempt from the tax cap?
We can certainly get that.
Okay.
I don't have that.
That's fine.
It just come up.
All right.
That's a fair question. I can imagine why you would ask, but it's not a problem.
Thanks.
But we can make it comfortable.
I appreciate it.
It would be great to have a copy as well.
Again, this kind of puts the county in the role of enforcing it as a tangent. We were talking about how you capitalize the loans, that there's a reserve, if you know, people are making the tax. But in the end, the people reach the point they're not paying their taxes, you can drop their clothes on those properties, take responsibility for that property. So we're going to have to have the property with the energy improvements, and we would literally have the liability from that upgrade to the property, correct?
I want to make sure I understand what you just said, the liability and the upgrade.
Yeah, you know, you're adding value to a property.
Right.
So simply could be foreclosing on a property that would be more valuable. The way that we do our tax auction.
Right.
You know, essentially, you know, our goal is to recapture you know, the amount of unpaid taxes.
Right.
So that's certainly something we've got to take a little serious look at and understand. You know, again, at that point, it's benefiting all the taxpayers of the county that have participated, or impacting all the taxpayers that have participated in the program. And so when I look at that, how many deals have you done since you've been
We have not.
So there are no bonds that have been issued?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a new program.
So all these numbers are still kind of in that introductory stage.
Exactly.
Right. We do have 35 projects that have... that we talked to, and 7 and 9 actually have filed applications, totaling about $3 million worth of financing. So, and then with the QCB project, that's going to help us go for most of the projects that are just starting. So, we're hopeful that we see many closings in the next quarter.
Can I just, following on what Ken's asking, is that was that fund that you were, the reserve fund that you were talking about, was that fund set up for the instance that Ken was talking about, where you'd have to foreclose and we hadn't realized, or is it for the late?
It was set up purely for the purpose of inoculating the municipality for permanent loss.
Okay.
So it's normally the way the program works from a foreclosure standpoint is that the municipality really can't, that you don't put anyone in sort of a tax lien status until later year.
Mm-hmm.
So they're 12 months delinquent when they haven't paid their taxes. So now they're in a tax lien status. Now you have to go through the process of the in rem proceeding to actually foreclose. The number I keep hearing is 31 months. So 31 months from the date in which the tax payment was due to the point where the municipality can act. So in that period of time, the municipality has to make us whole,
mm-hmm.
even though no way has paid them.
Right.
So there is exposure, unquestionably exposure to the municipality. But then once the municipality acts and forecloses on the property and sells the property or does whatever it has to do, if it does not collect all of the unpaid taxes as it relates to the charge, the EIC charge, then we make the municipality whole on that portion of the tax bill.
And if I can just ask a follow-on question, then I have Ken and Rich. And do we, since everyone's in the earliest stages, and here you talked about Connecticut being an aggressive example of state, do you have information about the success rates in Connecticut? Or
Yes, sir. Yeah, they've completed $13 million of the projects in a little over 14 months.
Okay.
They've got another $20 million in the pipeline. And expect to close by the end of this year a total of $60 million worth of projects, which percentage is about 40% office, about 25% multifamily, and it goes down to retail, and then some.
And in terms of the exposure to those municipalities, do we know any failures in terms of?
Too early to say, but the programs that are operating in California,
mm-hmm.
the anecdotal evidence, not documented, but anecdotal evidence, is that the delinquency rate for benefited properties, state benefited properties, is much lower. And the reasoning there is that we've already scrubbed out any weak credits from the
right.
process, so we're not proving the properties that are late on the taxes. Certainly the LTV rules, so in other words, if a property has 80% or higher loan to value on their mortgage, we're not going to finance that. So they're not over indebted. We're not financing more than 10% of the value of the property. There's no way that the property could actually, the tax burden could become a giant percentage of the tax bill in general. So there's a lot of safety in that, and it's consistent across the country. So the word is that we're not seeing higher delinquencies, it's actually a lot lower, and you're actually benefiting the community because those delinquencies are improving. The delinquencies that are happening are very, very low.
The power authority, as I mentioned, is doing over $200 million a year in energy efficiency. The overwhelming majority of the customers, though, are governmental. But there are private sector companies that we financed that were economic development power customers, but they were able to serve that market. There's never been a bad debt. Now, I think the reason why is because a property owner that would want to undertake something like this is generally not the kind of property owner that's looking to get away with not paying their taxes. I mean, I think these are more conscientious property owners that are interested in updating the value of their property and are much more conscious about making that obligation stick.
Right.
But I think we're in a different mindset than we might be under someone who's trying to like overly leverage a piece of real estate for other reasons.
Right.
These are people that are really trying to upgrade the quality of their property.
Is it interesting, Rich?
You may have answered this, and I may have missed it. If somebody forecloses, you know, somebody loses their home, and the bank pays the county taxes, the town taxes, they don't pay your debt back.
Okay.
They do.
Sure.
So then...
They lose the house. Again, we're not doing residential. They will lose the property.
So then, how many commercial properties have we ever sold at an Ulster County tax law? Probably none.
No,
we just have
commercial
yeah.
with the building on it.
Yeah.
With the building, not vacant land.
Yeah.
Not, most of our sales are vacant land that we do our tax.
It's also multifamily.
Well, that's what I said, but if there's a mortgage on, the bank is paying their loan back. And
they're paying the entire debt loan. You can't separate out.
No, that's what I was saying.
They're missing $1 of the tax bill, they're delinquent the whole bill.
Now, I would say that, I mean, realistically speaking,
but the bank don't move back, they do.
Yeah,
if I'm a bank and I'm holding the mortgage on a piece of property, the last thing I'm going to want is for you to foreclose on that property and jeopardize my security.
Right.
So it's a lot cheaper for me to pay the unpaid taxes and continue to control the future of the property
mm-hmm.
than allow the municipality to basically sell it at a fire sale to just collect their unpaid taxes.
Well, to answer that question is let's just go to real property and say how many multifamily or commercial buildings have been foreclosed on in the last 15 or 20 years that had no mortgage. I'm willing to bet it's probably two in 15 years because the banks pay the mortgages, period. And if you don't have a mortgage on it, you can afford your taxes. You're not going to lose, you're not going to have it sold at a tax sale for $30,000 when you could put a real estate sign and sell it for $60,000. So, I mean, that basically, to me,
we can look at, okay, Ken, did you want to speak first in this?
No, I think to try to frame the policy question for the legislators is that, you know, it's always the what ifs, you know, and certainly when you take someone's property and sell it at auction, it's just something we do because it's a necessity of the business that we're in, no one wants to do it, but, you know, you have a situation where if that instance were to occur, then normally you're selling properties, we sell them in a bulk, and a lot of times we're lucky and we collect more from the sale than we do when the taxes that are owed. But this kind of went up federally because you pay back these bonds first before you pay back the general fund of the county. Because if someone's not paying their taxes, they're not paying the whole bill.
Well, I'd say the tax sale, you would have already paid us. So all you're doing is paying yourself back. And if you make more.
So when the property goes delinquent, the county estimates.
No, you said the tax sale. So in the tax sale, it means you're already taking title.
Right,
you already paid us.
So when we take title,
we're responsible.
We're responsible to pay you before we make the sale.
Okay,
so then we have then potential risk. More potential risk for the legislators to consider is that if you could be in a situation where a very valuable improvement was made to the property, assuming there's no mortgage, there's no other anyone that's going to make the taxes whole. What we're talking about is additional taxes. Mm-hmm. That the county would be responsible, and all the taxpayers of the county would be responsible.
No, but in the tax sale, so I'm assuming you're going to a tax sale, right?
You're assuming you're selling the property for more than what's outstanding.
Well, even if it's not more, say it's less. Mm-hmm. Say it's less than what you paid us.
Mm-hmm.
We make you whole out of our reserves. So there's no chance you're losing money. The only issue is that you're paying us in the interim. That's the issue.
Because the cash flow issue is not a loss issue.
And there's no way.
So the coverage that you build into your deal is not to cover our cash flow.
It's to cover your loss.
That's what I was getting at earlier.
Yeah, because we don't control the lien process. You control it. There's no way we could control it. But in order for us to continue to receive low cost capital to fund these projects for Ulster County, we've got to show the capital markets, we're being paid as everyone else is getting paid. But here we built this reserve to make you whole in case there's a loss. We don't want you to throw it. You can't have a loss, technically.
Loss on just this portion of the building.
I'd love to see
kind of this typical deal.
Simple
10,000 square foot manufacturing
facility
with a full solar upgrade. The cost of that. I'd like to see.
Okay, so they only have four copies, sorry. But these are the projects that NYSERDA has done that we could have financed, and that you can go through the.
I think again an element that I touched on, but I think it really is important is the fact that we do require the project to be cash flow positive. There have been so few in the way of examples of situations where the municipality didn't get paid, either by the individual or, again, as the point you made about the bank. The bank has just not been allowed the property to fall into jeopardy to the point where you would foreclose that property by slowing it down. It just doesn't make any sense.
And if they do, they're going to be paying the taxes in the meantime. They're going to sell it. The owners are stuck paying taxes.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a deal.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you when you go through the records, I think you'll find that is really not an issue.
I don't remember ever seeing a house like home this once. I used to check them all the time. It's always vacant lot.
Well, and to your earlier point, we can absolutely look that up.
I can tell just for the committee's knowledge that there was a commercial building in the kind of Shangham, I want to say 4 years ago, 3 years ago, that ended up in a tax sale. It was a old Chinese family. They hadn't gotten a bill for like 2 years prior, and they hadn't gotten the notice that they'd paid. They paid the first year. They didn't get the second year, but they paid the next 2 years. Once it's 3 years delinquent, we take title. It was listed in the tax sale, and only because I saw the tax sale and went and had a conversation with him. Otherwise, his building would have been sold to the tax sale, and he would have had absolutely no idea.
And there was no mortgage?
No mortgage.
He had no idea that
the
mortgage
would be sold.
It wasn't ours?
And
he paid the $20,000 with the like $8,000 in penalty.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
This is
18%.
$150,000 would have got the county $150,000.
Oh, Dallas
probably would have gotten
$300,000.
The county didn't.
Yeah. They're not going to lose. I think it's important again because the goal here that I think we want to stay focused on is what we want to try to do. We want to make these buildings as energy efficient as possible, and we want to do it in such a way that number one, we can find the financing and provide a minimal cost. we believe that this process is a way of getting capital markets comfortable with the structure, where they know the municipality is making it whole. And that is the key here to, I think, making this successful and getting as many buildings as we can in New York State as energy efficient as possible. And I think the likelihood of a loss is so small, as opposed to the benefit that we're providing to the constituents in the community, it just offsets it, I think, to a dramatic extent. And I think I can say that as, you know, coming from a local official perspective as well, not just from my perspective, as EIC.
The program that are operating around the country, it's the benefits of long-term capital, it's really low cost, and it transfers to the next property. This is huge from the standpoint of actually scaling demand for these improvements. We all know our buildings are really old and easily fixed. And so this is just one other thing. It's not going to be for everybody, but for the people that need this type of capital, it's almost for many, many other states. So,
what percentage of the total cost ends up in the reserve account? This is one of my questions. Is there a case-by-case basis? Is there sort of a standard?
We're a CSM, which is Public Financial Management and Financial Advisors.
Yep.
And they advise the probably largest financial advisor in the country to buy the municipalities.
Mm-hmm.
They're going through right now the research on what are the losses to municipalities in the tax program. And the data is so infinitesimally small that it would be ridiculously low if we were to tell you what that number would be. So in essence, we're putting 1%. Look like 1% of the notional. It already is funded at $1 million. We're adding 1% on top of that. And then the breakdown is going to be between bondholders and municipalities. But if we're just going on the research, it would be so keen that we're not going to do that. It's going to be something like between 0.35 and 0.75 of the 1%.
Then it goes into one?
The two buckets, one for municipalities, one for bondholders.
Okay.
And again, it'll be continually funded. And the idea is that we're modeling ourselves after the Environmental Facilities Corporation, which has this gargantuan reserve for their benefit, not for the municipalities, for their benefit. And that's eventually we're going to be ready to pull that. So we'll be able to issue very, very, very low cost debt because the reserve at that time, you know, the municipalities are part of that.
The reserve is important as it protects you from an erosion, but the reserve is also important because the larger the reserve, the higher the bond rating we can get, and therefore the lower the interest cost on the financing.
Yeah.
So it really serves multiple benefits, you know, from the standpoint of relatively inexpensive money on top of you, protecting you from any permanent loss.
I have a question. The qualified energy conservation bonds that you spoke of, you said Ulster was eligible for $1.9
million?
Did that have any kind of sunset, or is it just...
We don't know. At the moment, no. But the conversations in Washington is that if it's not used by, it's either 15 or 16, December 15 or 16, the program may disappear. So it is something that I think we want to take advantage of and start using as soon as possible. And quite frankly, interest rates being where they are right now, you know, no one knows for sure where interest rates are going, but the perception is they're going to go up. So the sooner we can close on deals using QVCDs, everybody wins as a result of that.
And we've actually talked to Senator Schumer's office and Senator Gillibrand's office. Senator Schumer's on the Finance Committee. He's advising him that they should not sunset this so it gives more time for municipalities to use it.
Right.
It's very difficult for municipalities to use 1.9 million on its own. But because we have models to aggregate all these financings from across the state, we're able to leverage that 1.9 plus Westchester 6 and Joint Justice is 3 million and pull all together. It's very cost effective.
Yeah, but right now in New York State, excluding New York City, there's about $100 million in unused QVCD authority out there. And, you know, every conversation we've had with everybody, including the most senior people in the governor's office, that they want to find a way to utilize that resource, because it would be terrible if that went unused. I mean, what a squandered opportunity. It really be shit.
So just some general questions. As an LDC, we've just recently been through the formation and then dissolution of an LDC. Who exactly formed the LDC?
The town of
Bedford.
Bedford? Would you be willing to amend your bylaws to add members of Ulster County to your board of the LDC?
When you become a member of EIC, then the municipalities become eligible for a board position. But there is a nominating, just like any other board, there's a nominating committee. We would have to go through that nominating committee. So I couldn't sit here and guarantee that Ulster County would become a member, but I can guarantee you that Ulster County would be eligible. But there is a process that we have to go through.
How many board members are there?
11.
11?
And 3 are reserved for municipalities, the largest in the standing. 3 are reserved for the Northern Westchester communities that sponsored this. Bedford was just the lead town of 14 municipalities actually got to go in Westchester. And then there's 5 open seats.
For that large seat?
Yeah, large seat are going. And this current board is an appointed board by the town of Bedford, so that rolled off into the bylaws by 2018. So by March 2018, it's now a full membership board. So
do you have a copy of the bylaws with you?
Or
can we have a copy for the record?
Sure.
Thank you. The amount of brain damage we went through setting up this company was extreme. So it's a work of art.
Do they have rules like you know multiple members from the same town or something like that?
We don't get in. Can't
have 3 members
not from the same town. No. Hopefully it wouldn't be possible for only one member per seat. So it could be Kingston and Ulster.
Well, you could, no, I mean, like, say a town of Greenburg, you couldn't have 3 people that live in Greenburg on the board.
Yeah.
You could just have one.
So
just the one person.
It has to be the town executive or the chief financial officer of the member.
Okay.
Could you provide to the people the your parish finally?
Yeah, sure. They're actually online.
Yeah.
They're on our website and on the parish.
I just want to add one sort of little note that I think it's in flipping through your case studies, it just resonated for me because I've done the deep energy retrofit on my home using the Green Jobs Premier program, and the comfort level is really remarkably different. You know, these old buildings are often leaky sieves, and it's just something that you live with, and my building also was filled with mold. It just was not a healthy situation. And, you know, it's sort of a hidden employee benefit to these businesses and to the multifamilies, to the residents. So I just wanted to mention that because it's, in terms of quality of life, it's a really important factor.
And it's just income, energy, the amount of income being used for energy in lower income. It's like 29% in Westchester County versus 3% for middle to upper income. It's crazy. And then you're living in buildings that haven't been upgraded since 1980. I mean, that's the affordable housing argument, and the whole argument for industrial development. Yeah. And so these buildings are 100 years old, running factories that are trying to compete with China. It's very, very compelling.
And also just to congratulate Energize on having such an excellent track record in Westchester County with the residential program, which is funded by Green Jobs for New York. And, you know, it's just, it's a real model for the rest of the region to aspire to.
We hope to bring that to Ulster as well if we get additional funding for the residential program. Right now,
one step at a time.
It's available to Ulster and the commercial program, but residential could come as well as a member.
Yeah, and Rupko's doing a good job, too, up here, so. Let's get around.
I'm just going through this real quick. The ex officio director for the first 10 years, the town of Bedford, is that in addition to, or is that one of the 3 Northern West Sector directors?
That is in addition to.
All right, so it's 11 directors plus the ex officio director.
It's 11 total, so I guess it comes out of the at large of taking active in the degrees. We're already
okay.
3, so yes.
All right. I'll have more questions about this, but I'm not going to be able to bear them all now.
Well, I'll first get a copy of that to everyone on the...
Absolutely.
We can
more copies.
Yeah. That's great.
One more.
Just right here. So.
that has this is a baggage of enabling material.
Why don't I give you the whole set?
Yeah, it's a bunch of sets. And this is what the DOE paid for.
Okay, do we have any more questions for tonight?
No,
thank you. Yes, thank you, Joe, very much.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you.
And we'll discuss and see where it goes from there. That would be great, actually, just so we have it on file electronically, which I didn't understand. And that way, since it's other legislators, anyone would remove it. I would imagine it'd be of interest to the Economic Development Committee as well.
So, we would have the opportunity for a director until we accept it, because it says the original director will serve as a funding.
That there are OPCs.
Okay.
So, you become a member,
okay.
But yes, Tigard County just nominated, and we got 17, so.
Okay.
Not without question.
Their county executive?
Their county executive, and they, because the startup board actually has options to not simply have a county executive, it's a church and the planner, the head planner.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Yeah. Thank you. All right, we're going to move on to new business, the new past season. We have the resolution in our packet.
Yes.
All right, we need to put your pack in. Okay, if everyone's it's in there. Just for the recovery fee. Okay. Everyone has the draft resolution. I think I'm gonna let Nana begin discussion. I apologize.
Where are we now
in the draft resolution for the new capacity zone. So if I could first just I'll talk about process for a minute. That Nana brought this to my attention late last week. I'm still a little dumbfounded that we as a legislature weren't aware of this last year. I mean, it's pretty shocking and pretty important. This resolution, as we all know, is late. We missed the resolution deadline, so technically it is and will be in the purview of the Laws and Rules Committee. We have two members and the chair actually sitting on our committee, so that's a good thing, because we need the chair's approval to get it to Laws and Rules. The reason times of the issue is there's a Public Service Commission hearing on February 20th, and it may be one of the last opportunities we have to weigh in on this issue. Mana's provided a lot of information on the new capacity zone. It's a lot to take in short notice, but I can tell you that the research that I've done in such short notice has not revealed any positive for our constituents to this. I mean, I've yet to see any positive, and I'm open to the discussion if someone has to say anything. I think that I've read the draft resolution. We can start the discussion there. I'm hoping that this, we can approve it in this committee as a recommendation for Laws and Rules to approve it late. Because again, we could pass it in this committee, and if Laws and Rules chooses not to act, it'll be timely for next month. It won't be this month, but we'll miss the February 20th. So Okay, I'm going to turn the floor over to Manna briefly to, if you can give a brief summary.
I want to say that it's really a different deadline. It's the February 26th deadline of FERC to try to weigh in on that with regard to the new capacity zone. There is a meeting on February 20th of the Public Service Commission, but that really addresses the new transmission that is being proposed, and so that's the second resolution, but it's also relatively early in the stages of transmission. So I just wanted to bring that up. And I'm only a week ahead of the rest of you folks. Obviously, I've been following energy issues pretty intensely for the last 5 years, and I do want to say that it seems like we, the public, find out about this at the 11th hour, and there's something wrong. Not that the Public Service Commission or FERC or NYISO or the Power Authority, they do what they need to do legally. There's no doubt about that. But the impact that something like this new capacity zone could have on our economy is huge, and well, somehow it seems to me they ought to ask us before it's the 11th hour, us being, the people in the zone that would be affected. So there are, a lot of different reasons why we're concerned about this zone, but the main thing is that it will require an increase in rates. And I believe I actually have a map from a presentation that was done for the Supervisors Association this morning. I can pull that out and circulate it. But basically, the capacity is needed in Westchester and New York City. And they're looking to add the Central Hudson area and the Orange and Rockland, the zone that we and Dutchess, Orange, Putnam are in to incentivize more capacity coming into this area. And they're doing it before they've worked through the issue of resolving the transmission bottlenecks. And we think that that's backwards, that we ought to look at if the energy is needed south of here, why should our rates be going up?
And that's just interrupt, but that's the crux of what we're talking about in terms of the effects to our constituents.
Yeah.
I mean, we can discuss potential environmental bonuses to using less energy, but the reality is what the estimates that we've seen are anywhere from 6 to 25% rate increases, depending on whether you're residential or commercial, and depending on who's doing the estimating.
And depending on how much, what percentage of your bill is capacity, is based on the
peak time
capacity rate, as opposed to a delivery charge or a system benefit charge. There's a lot of different components of your bill. But to the degree that you are charged for capacity, if that, and I keep thinking about, the businesses that are on the edge. And even if it was as little as 3 to 4%, that can make a difference to a small business on the edge, a dairy farm that uses high electricity, has to for its business, and for low-income people. So there's some statistics about, the increase in the number of shutoffs in the Central Hudson area. And if the bills go up more, that's going to exacerbate that problem. So, and I really have looked for positive reasons, and that's why in the issues discussion, I was the one who added possible benefits. And the one major benefit, Mark Fielking and a man named Mike Gordon and myself served on the energy working group of the Mid-Hudson Regional Sustainability Planning Process. And Mike is somebody I know and trust and is extremely knowledgeable on energy issues. So I called him and he said, the one benefit that he can really underscore is that when prices are really high, people get serious about energy efficiency. I would much rather people get serious about energy efficiency because we have good programs available to make it economically viable than to put everyone's bill up and hope that works. So, with all due respect, to Mike Gordon, who runs a business called Jewel Assets, and his business is based on helping businesses use different technology to promote energy efficiency through demand response. So they don't use energy as much during peak, and then they use it during off-peak, and it saves them money. That's all well and good, but there are a lot of ways to promote energy efficiency, and for those of you who know how much I've been working on that over the years, I certainly wouldn't want to do anything that would hurt that, but I just think in the net, I have not been able to find a reason why this needs to be done, or at least why it would need to be done now. It just seems to me, with the governor's energy highway and four responses for our area, and we can sort through the pros and cons of those responses. But when that transmission bottleneck is relieved, the areas that need the capacity will be able to be served. And I think prices will actually go down rather than up. And it is so late in the game that I'm not even sure that essentially this is a memorializing resolution.
Yeah, does the legislature vote on this?
The state legislature? I mean, how does it
right now in the hands of FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. So all we can accomplish by this is to let FERC know that we think they should hold off. And I think that...
Because it is imminent. I mean, that's another thing. I mean, it's going to affect the name as of now.
But they can. They have the ability on February 26th to delay this. And over time, if they delay it, I mean, you know, a comparable situation is fracking. They did a moratorium, and then over time, we don't have a ban, but it didn't happen. And at least we could buy time to see what the real impact of improving transmission in the region are. The other thing I'm very, personally, I have an objection to is that the New York ISO is energy neutral. Their job is to assure capacity, to assure reliability. And so they're not really, they don't give a preference to where that comes from. So if dirty, expensive to run and maintain peaker plants along the Hudson are the source of this extra capacity, then so be it. There's no incentive when you're building more capacity to have that be energy efficiency and renewables. And that's just how ISO works. And there's some real substantial reliability requirements to the New York ISO. But here we have a case where this little group, Citizens for Local Power, who mounted a case to try to prevent Central Hudson from merging with Fortis. We're now on the same side on this. Central Hudson, Fortis, and the people that have been doing this research agree that this should, that we should ask FERC to hold off. The Public Service Commission essentially agrees with us and has asked for a delay, an exemption. That's not the right word, but you know, to hold off as well.
And let me ask a couple questions.
Okay, just, let me ask,
so that's going around first, and then I can.
And I am, as I say, about a week ahead of you on this, so bear with me so we can.
Is the only resolution we're considering the first one, the new capacity bill?
Yes.
Okay.
Today, yes. I mean,
right.
The other one's in there for future discussion.
Okay.
Yeah. We're right here.
I have concerns about the other one.
Okay. Right. This is, that's, that you should read and be prepared to discuss at the next meeting.
Yeah.
But if I may, then I also have concerns about the other one.
Okay.
And I absolutely don't, you know, unconditionally support them. I want to find out more about that.
Mm-hmm.
And if it could, I'll just pass this around. This is the, we asked for a follow-up.
Are you going to see you on
the let's stay on the new capacity zone right now. Let's,
I just keep, wanted to make sure that.
Yeah, no, I want to keep this discussion right now on the new capacity zone because we could head off on the tour.
I have one more question on that. Yes. If I could just jump in. The only thing I have, I've looked through the resolution. The first thing that I have a concern with in the resolution is it says possibly increasing rates by as much as 25%. I've not, in any of my research on this, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 whereas. I've seen the other numbers, 6%, 11%, and I've seen slightly higher than that, but I've not seen anything as high as 25%.
So
I would be in favor of striking the 25%.
I've seen 18% pretty well published. I mean, that's commercial.
If we're gonna do 18 and that's fine, I've just not seen 25%, so it concerns me to put it in the form of a resolution that we have.
And I'll tell you the one other thing I saw. I didn't write this, but the one other thing that I did see was an increase in up to 425% for capacity, not the charges. Which that, I don't know how that all translates, but it sounds very alarming to me. A 425%. Increased charges for capacity charges. I don't know what the
25% is footnoted.
It is.
If you look in the summary of the issues, and you know, I'm not fussy about whether we need it in or not.
It's not even the resolve.
It is footnoted there.
What footnote number is it?
It's footnote number 3, and it's the first concern where Public Service Commission stated that the new capacity zone could raise electricity rates by as much as 25%, costing the ratepayers in the new zone over $500 million in a 3-year period, and that is footnoted. It's footnote number 3, the order accepting the proposed tariff revisions and establishing a technical conference in the first document.
So it was actually a PCS comment saying 25%.
I'm going to end up at the Library of Congress meeting.
I don't think I've ever been in a meeting where there was actually a footnote. It's referencing a PCS document to FERC, so
you have to acknowledge.
You got the first document.
No, but it's
pretty good. All right.
Thank you,
Marianne. Okay, you said that was your first concern. You said only, then you rewrote it to be your first concern. What are your other concerns?
I remember that there was another one I thought, but I have to look back through it. So you can go
ahead. Okay, you reserve the right to come back. Okay. Thanks for now.
Congratulations on being on top of the issue. I mean, obviously the federal government has a very large stick that they use when they're trying to enforce big policy change. So
I don't have a lot of comments on the first resolution, but I would just caution on the second resolution as well, too. I mean, there are four completed plans. I want to make sure that the legislators are aware that Ulster County filed for party status with regards to the fourth proposal. So we have a formal seat at the table. That's going through the planning director and the county attorney's office to care of that. When the proposal was first announced, we notified the towns at the time. So the right people are involved with that conversation. I would just caution, just looking at the second resolution quickly, that it almost advocates for doing the car price on this side of the river versus the other. I would caution the legislators, you might not want to get involved in that debate at this time. But certainly I could offer, I'd love to have the planning commissioner come in and discuss the issue broadly and talk about the work that we've done, where he has done his review. I'm happy to make that happen.
I think that would be good, even independent of the resolution, but yeah. I'll coordinate with you.
The second resolution, I might not be timely given the current status of things.
We're not moving on.
Yeah, obviously, the first one is timely. I'm just saying this, that you might want to have a broader discussion with the folks in the planning department that are involved with the planning operation.
The thing about the second resolution is it speaks to that February 20th meeting at Public Service Commission, but I don't feel like I know enough about that, and it is overall early in the process. And Tracy, if you would bear with me, I just want to circulate this because
you can circulate. But I really want to say on new capacity zone because we should get to a resolve with that. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And then we can circulate and discuss that as we go. But
I'll move it.
Okay.
To be clear,
I would like us to vote on it. What we're doing is we're voting to pass it in this committee. We will send our past, if it passes, I hope it passes, our past to the laws and rules, as I stated earlier, technically laws and rules purview, but if for some reason laws and rules weren't to take it up or weren't to pass on laws and rules, It will be on our agenda. It'll be late, but it'll be on our agenda next month. In next month.
March.
You can have it for your next meeting.
We're talking laws and rules. Yes, but I'm saying if laws and rules fail to take it up, then we will over the end. So we're going to
make a memorializing statement. You want to have it.
You want it timely. Yes. Yeah. We're moving into laws and rules. That's what I'm saying. But we can pass it as a matter of process in this committee as well.
So just to be clear, you're motioning to refer this to the Laws and Rules Committee to refer.
To say we're in support of it.
To say we're in support of it, exactly.
You're holding on the second one.
We're not talking about it. This is on the
second one. I'd love to have a Commissioner go out and talk about it in
detail.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Fun reading.
Do we have a second on this?
I'll second it.
Okay.
Before we, can I have a comment and a question? So in Laws and Rules, if you're uncomfortable with that 25%, that could change there.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I have some reading to do because I found the FERC docket number and it's 33 pages long, so I don't think I'll find exactly the notation in there right now.
You can totally find it.
Only like a word search.
I don't know if my iPad will do a specific word search. I have to go to my computer and get
them. Okay. Can all in favor?
Aye.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. And I think it's my understanding that I'll talk to you about process with Laws and Rules because you're going to have to allow it to go to Laws and Rules. Your committee is only going to be... Yeah, it will. But your committee is only going to have 3 members, so I think we should reach out to Kevin Roberts as well and give him a heads up and any information he needs. Well, thank you for that. Let's circulate that. And any final comments on that? We'll finish discussion on that.
Yeah, the only thing I want to say in circulating this is it's another informational meeting, and it goes into more detail about downvotes, and I want you to be sure to know that this is only here for their contact information. I have no endorsement of, I'm still in a learning phase myself, but all they basically said at the meeting on January 29th was, we're cheaper and we're better. That didn't tell me very much.
Right.
So we gave them more time to go. It's very technical and to go into some technical details.
And just to also back up, in case everyone didn't know, I believe Manny said that this morning at the supervisors meeting, that the supervisors also passed the resolution in opposition.
They passed the first
amendment, new capacity zone.
New capacity zone unanimously, and they're going to bring it to their towns.
Okay. So everyone knows.
They weren't all there, right? I'm just
saying.
I'm really trying not to be a pain in the ass.
It's okay.
There are some supervisors that have a concern about the word unanimous being used about their organization.
Oh, okay.
Because you're not
all
right. All there.
And they weren't all there.
Okay, yeah. I just want to make sure. I've really heard that concern from two of them.
That's true.
There's quorum there, and they all vote one way, it's unanimous.
People don't care,
that's just.
Right, yeah, I'm not trying to
be controversial. You're limiting the body, and you're limiting the assignment, so. I want to clarify.
All those present voted in the affirmative. I'll be clear next time. Okay, so, and we'll make sure that goes around. I need to get a copy of what you're circulating on the second one. I don't know where it's
going. We go down that way. Okay.
It only went that way. Oh. Yeah. Yeah, are there more of them?
I think this is it.
Okay.
No, no,
and then here is... moving on to old business. Okay, this is mostly updates, but it's just more to let everybody know. And your packet has a lot of information. So we're working on the Climate Smart Committee appointments. So far, there's five members of the board. This is something we've been trying to do for 2 years. We have, Mann has agreed to serve from this committee. We have potential candidates for, Laura Petit has agreed to serve on the hopes of the town, representing Town and Village. Peter Lawrence agreed to serve from Public Works. And we have two possible candidates, which we're working through. That said, what I'd like to do, once we have a full slate, we'll circulate resumes for everybody to this committee, have this committee pass the recommendation to the chair. It's the chair's appointment, and I'm going to be meeting with the chair to discuss all of these. No, it's never been appointed. This isn't sitting members. These are people who were talking about literally the last 2 years of environmental, we've then called environmental committee meetings. Every meeting this was on the agenda, and we never seated the committee. So Carl will be very happy when it's finally seated, and I'm going to get the chairman of the legislature up to speed with what we're doing and who we're talking about, and make sure that that's okay with him, and see if he has any alternative suggestions. We'll see. So, but I talked to Peter about it, and Peter was interested, and I think he'd be a real asset to the committee. And I also reached out to Dean Fabiano to let him know that Peter was willing. But then I'll speak to the chair. So that's where we're at with Climate Smart. RRA board, as you know, we interviewed two candidates. The majority of the Democratic caucus is in support of the two candidates, and again, I have a meeting scheduled with the chairman of the legislature, in the process of scheduling a meeting with chairman of the legislature, and I'll keep everyone apprised of where we're at with that. So I'm expecting that that'll probably be in next month's packet. Environmental Management Council, I wanted to circulate the appointment list to the committee. Environmental Management Council, as you all know, is an executive appointment, but I wanted you to see this in case you did not see your town represented, or if there's not a representative from one of the towns you represent, perhaps you could reach out to one of your towns and ask if they have a representative that they're interested in, and then we could bring that forward to the executive to ask for that appointment to fill the EMC. Yes. And lastly, Recycling Oversight Committee, we have no current, I mean, technically, Mann and I are probably still members because the resolution says we stay members until you're replaced. But that that committee's been inactive for now, I'd say, going on 2.5 years, and it's important that we fill that. So, again, this was a four-year information. I want you to think about it. There's one legislative appointment. There's one appointment. The GOC all there. So we should if anyone has any suggestions for next month's meeting. Rich? Okay, just to say, if anyone has any suggestions for next month's meeting, let me know, and if we can get any of these appointments in. I'm okay with even bringing these appointments in, not as a whole group, but we don't have to have every board member, every seat, come on one resolution. Just start to fill it. Legislator Perry.
Okay, that was my question.
Okay.
Are you looking to get everybody?
No. No, I think it's fine. Let's start to get it filled. And then on the EMC, I know this is old business, but on the EMC, you remember, and Rich, this was before you were on the committee, but it actually was inspired by you. We were in the process of working to get rid of the term limits on the EMC because we recognize that members sit for a long period of time, and the only reason that we're not out of compliance for many of the current members is that the clock started ticking again when the charter went into effect. So we had some back and forth between the county attorney and then legislative attorney Chapman, and not to get into that, I can give you lots of paperwork, but there were problems. Specifically, as I'd like to call it, with bringing the terms up to compliance with the state. Actually, our charter has been serving terms that is not what the state says they should be terming, what they should be serving. But if we were to change that, that would be subject to a public referendum. Because
our charter is what? I'm sorry.
Our charter has the EMC members serving a different term than the enabling legislation has been serving. So we were in the process of trying to fix it, but we can't fix it because it would technically take a power away from the executive. So it'll have to go in as a package of the charter revision.
Does it supersede our charter anyway?
Technically, no. On this, it's, in this instance, no. Yeah. So in this case, the thing we were really trying to deal with, just to stay on focus, and what we were really trying to deal with was the term limit. And that, after all the conversation back and forth, it was determined that we could get rid of the term limits without affecting the executive's power. And that was agreed upon between then legislative attorney Chapman and county attorney Hebranek. So if we want to get rid of the term limits, which I think is a good idea because we have volunteers who are willing to serve and have served for many, many, many years, way in excess of what you're seeing on this paper, we can move that as a resolution next month.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
I'm like kind of dumbfounded that terms would be in conflicting with the state law says. So what I think we should do is, in the spirit of doing what the state law says we should do, is move forward with the referendum and have everybody, the legislature, the executive, say, this is housework, house cleaning stuff. We all clearly need to be in compliance with the state law. Let's do it. Let's fix it all at once. Let's not piecemeal it. Well, let's get the guys on board here, but we don't want to step on the executive's toes and change the power. It's the state. Let's do what we need to do to be in compliance with the state. Change the term limit thing. I don't see it. It'll be a problem passing a referendum in November. Get it done.
Right. No, I think we should do that in November, but I believe we should do the term limits right now. We can do it. It's not, that's something that we can do. That's what was determined at the end of the...
Trace, I appreciate that, and I'm not saying I'm opposed to that, but then let's do another thing. Let's look at the term limit thing and say, if you miss 3 consecutive meetings, you're automatically off the board. If you miss 7 meetings out of 12, you're off the board. Let's make a real thing so you're not just appointed and not showing up, or you're showing up at 2 meetings a year, but you want to stay on it from, you know, the town of Ellendale or the town of Sorgates or something. Let's get our law in order with the state law.
Mm-hmm.
And let's get a resolution. So then in 2 years, let's say you've got a guy that's been on there 9 years for 4 years.
Okay.
So let's look at maybe laws to make a copy to make attendance. If you want to go over that 3-year limit, you have to hit a certain percentage of your meetings.
Okay, so what at the next meeting, we'll have a copy of the bylaws and we'll discuss
what we have the capacity to change and what we do not have the capacity to change without a referendum, which will then be charter revision.
We actually had a discussion at Laws and Rules, if I could just jump in, about appointments to some of these boards and about making some changes of the makeup of some of the boards to sort of have different oversight, not to have them all appointed by one entity, but maybe have, you know, executive appointments and legislative appointments to some of these boards.
And I think that's the appropriate place to have that conversation, as Laws and Rules. But as far as the term limits, it's something that, you know, Mary and Ken here, you recommended something that we went over and over in this committee. So I would love to just get that one thing changed. And that's something we can do fairly easily. The next meeting. I'm not looking to rush anything through. It's not going to be a late resolution. But the rest of what you're talking about, Rich, I think is something that's going to need to be discussed in your committee, for sure.
Well, if you're choosing a one rule here, then all the rules should be changed here. If we're going to change the rules and laws and rules, then all the rules should be changed and laws and rules. Should be changed in one rule here and another rule in another one.
Why?
Yeah, I'm not saying they need to be in that committee. I'm fine with being here because it's an environmental one. Since my concern with changing the term limits is, why do we want to change the term limits and find out somebody hasn't shown up to a meeting in 2 years and you've given them an extra term? Let's do it all. Let's just make the budget. Let's come in compliance with the law. Let's make it.
Okay.
But we know. We check the attendance records of people. We check all that. And say you cannot be appointed past 2 years or 3 terms. I don't know. I just, and another thing,
we should address the, we should find out, actually, if that's an issue.
Does the Governance Committee want to appoint somebody over 1 term or 2 terms if they haven't shown up to 50% of the meetings?
No. That's what I'm saying. We should find out if that's an issue.
And another thing, Trace, I'm not happy about the county law being not in compliance with the state law.
Mm-hmm.
Because the time the charter was written was the time everything was going on with the UNC and Rick Richard.
Right.
Who wrote the charter? Who wrote this? So how could somebody be so far off to write a county law to not be in compliance with the state law if there wasn't self-interest involved? I don't believe it was an oversight.
The 2 versus 3 years, you're saying you don't believe was an oversight?
No. Why is our bylaws not in our terms?
That's the difference. It's 1 is 2 years and 1 is 3 years.
I just think it's garbage.
But I hear you on the issue of a holistic view, so I'll work with Kristen, I'll gather what we need to have that discussion. Potentially, depending on what our agenda is, potentially the next meeting, if not the following, and depending on how dense it's going in terms of rule issues, then if it seems like it's going to be too much tackling rules, we'll defer it to Laws and Rules. I would love to see the extending the limits thing finished. I agree. That's a very well taken point. I hear you. Because I'd like to know.
People do not need boards and they never show up.
And they don't show up. And the people went to the fire advisory board. We have somebody that doesn't show up.
Yeah. But he's probably, she gets reappointed.
Well, he's going to get reappointed and they don't want him to. But then that becomes a big, you know what I mean? Like, if it's automatic, then that's taken care of it without.
It's an excellent point. We should find out. I will reach out to find out if it's an issue on the EMC. It's a great point, and I think we do need to address it. And depending on what we find out, we may or may not move forward with even the partial aspect of it. The RA reports are included in this packet. From now on, I've asked Kim Rose to distribute electronically to the committee when they send the reports to the legislature. So every committee member will just be included as an automatic in terms of the minutes and the tonnage reports and whatnot. And I'm sorry, Kim and Charlie, that you found yourself at the last of the agenda today, but can I turn the floor over to you and ask if, you know, for just a brief update, anything we need to know since last week? You had elections, the board elections.
Well, the reorganizational meeting took place, and the officers are Leon Smith as chairman, Catherine Nielsen as chairman, Al Kiefer as treasurer, Ken Gilligan as secretary. And
that's the status quo, that's what it was, Brian. Is there anything in terms of the tonnage report? This is the last set. Is there anything that we should be aware of, or anything that are we pretty much on track?
We're doing well. As far as financial concerns, we're okay. We just appointed an internal auditor. I think you have that in
there. Yeah.
And of the two, both of them are equally qualified. So it's Tortia and Kimball. And the board decided to go with Tortia, which is $2,000 more a year than Mary Kimball. I voted against it because I thought everybody seemed to agree that both the auditors were equally qualified, and their reports as to what they were going to do was quite elaborate and left nothing to doubt. And I thought that if that was the case, we should go with the lowest one. We should go with the lowest bid. But I wasn't able to convince my colleagues. But that's neither here nor there. Business went off.
I do want to say, too, the article in the paper that said we confident people are going there. That's a little misleading. To say the least, just before the bond is paid.
Right.
We're going to be paid in about 2 weeks, and that's been wiped out. The way you have. The way you've got to look at it, you've got to look at it like the same mortgage.
Yeah.
And you save up every month and pay the mortgage. We do a fortune for you, but the three of them are very minor. Very minor. You have one thing a year. And what you're supposed to do is save up money throughout the year and then have that money paid that month, and then after that four. So maybe we didn't.
Probably
2.4 million,
that's what I doubt,
next week.
Did you get the
payroll
loss? I mean, was it budget
neutral? Yeah, we're going to use a little bit of reserves. But again, those reserves, we had enough money to make the bond in November. We had enough money to make it. It all depends on what calendar year, fiscal year, how you want to look at it. But from here going forward, we're budgeting at 120,000 tons a year, and we did about 118.5 last year.
Pretty, pretty.
So that was a pretty darn good number. And we picked that number back last June, or put them on the front of the budget. So we pretty much nailed it. And what we're going to do, hopefully, is next year our debt service is going to be reduced by about 250,000. So that's what we'll be right. We're also going to have a bid this year for Tom Spogel. Also, we're going to save some money there. The one thing we don't have is we don't have that. Tom throws on almost 750% in reserves. And so we've got $2.25 million. We really should have laying in a bank account somewhere.
The state controller account. State controller. Well, you know, the enabling legislation says that. If you read the state legislation creating the RRA, it says between, I think, 10 and 20%. It's a huge number.
You know what that is? It's like
I thought it was 15%. Maybe.
You
may
have.
The county government's between what? Three and five? And
the
municipal government, the city of Cape Town is 15%.
And you know why that is? Yeah. Because in a municipality, you can rely on property taxes. Your fluctuations in your revenues aren't that high. I mean, if you have sales tax, but pretty steady. Our revenue, if you're basing it on funds, it's all over the board. I mean, it'll take a while to swing from one year to the other because it all depends on the economy. We don't have that static, so when the comptroller's office was down auditing us a couple of years ago, I talked to him about that. And he said, that's why you have to have that 15%. Municipalities, of course, they're much easier to budget for.
Mm-hmm.
You only definitely only need 5%. It's pretty stable. In your business, you're fluctuating all over the place. You've got to have a lot more money in reserves. He said 10 to 15. He said, if you can even push it up to about 20. So if you can start getting over 20, then we're going to we're going to come back into your tipping fees in July. You should lower your tipping fee. But you've got to be in that 10 to 20% range. So those years, you know, if you're on your tank like you did in 08, you may be budgeting for 120, but you may only get 90. And then you better have the money in the bank to cover all that. Otherwise, it's going to pull back to the county.
Yeah.
So,
okay, yeah, because in service.
So hopefully, over the next couple of years, I guess my point is, you know, we might have some cost reductions. We're definitely around $450,000 taken off for debt service for next year, and that equates to about $4 a ton. But if we save even more money in regard to the final disposal, we'll just get a good figure probably around September timeframe. If we save even more money, you know, we're going to reduce the tipping fees, maybe a little bit, maybe not that much. I usually then just keep it static. I don't know. I can't say when I was the one in February. But we wanted to satisfy the comptroller's office. So we've got to get those money to the bank for those reserves. For two reasons. First of all, I want to satisfy the comptroller's office. Second of all, to kindly take the tank again, I'm going to come back to the lift station after and then service fee. We should be self-supported. So we're going to realize all that savings next year, maybe not. But we'll be able to hopefully put some money in mind.
Any questions?
This isn't for Tim, this is actually for where did we leave the negotiations that we were in last year on an agreement with the RRA board on on approval of bonding authority?
We had it wasn't. And we had, there had been the agreement that from the legislature, Carl and I met with Leon and Tim, and there was an agreement and there was agreed upon language. But then when the after the fact resolution stalled in this committee, then the RRA board pushed back saying that maybe they were going to revoke it, so we should probably pick that up. I'll call Leon.
And the agreement was bonding over $500,000.
Yes.
And there was no wiggle room on an aggregate total, right?
No.
And the red, but I had talked about wanting a yearly aggregate of like $1.5 million.
No, there was no wiggle room.
Okay.
I will. I told that more than I forgot it, but yeah, I'll reach out to Leon this week, and hopefully we can move that forward, because it was something everybody agreed upon at one point.
I'm sorry, I have one last thing on the appointments, unless we talked about this before I got here.
Yes, we did not.
Do you want to wait, and then we'll move on to that afterwards, or do you want to talk about that?
No, there was no new business. So
okay.
Yeah.
I just want to make it clear for the record that after looking at all the backup information provided on the appointments and trying to search my recollection for how things have gone over the past 6 years I've been on the legislature, it looks to me like there's one minority member and one majority member up this year, and we might have a disagreement over whether or not there are two majority or not.
Okay. The legislative attorneys weighed in on that. And no.
Oh.
Chris Ragucci.
Okay.
I can get you that document.
I appreciate it, because our council has a different opinion.
And there's also past practice that shows that what's happened, and this is something we can talk about moving forward, that what's happened in the past is we've been taking that 4-1 balance. When Fred Wagnola was appointed, he was appointed as a minority member, and he ran, as everybody knows, he ran for office, and the year that he ran for office, the Republicans took the majority, and his seat, which might have been deemed a minority seat, was filled with a majority appointment, because again, chasing the 4-1 makeup. That's the way it's been, and the rules also, the enabling legislation, which is Chris Ragucci's opinion in terms of one member recommended by the minority. But I'll get you legal opinion on that. Yeah. Okay. Who?
Do you want to follow on that?
Yeah, I have to go right if I could. The spot that you're saying that Fred Blood Nola's, when Fred Blood Nola won, the spot that was replaced for him, you're looking at Don Dabrowski.
I find this document to be confusing and misleading. I have the resolutions at home.
That said,
the appointments. And that year they were all majority appointments.
I think that might have been a typographical error, number one. And number two, just to give some historical perspective, and we can look back in the minutes if we have to, I'm pretty sure that what happened that year was that Dabrowski wasn't a new appointment. He was an appointment that was already on there. He was a majority member under the Democrats. What happened was we had to restagger the terms because somewhere throughout the history, they unstaggered the terms and somebody replaced somebody who replaced somebody, and it ended up that it wasn't the staggered terms that they're...
Right, that was the year that Kathy Nielsen got appointed for a one-year term.
Right, and we had to restagger the terms, so he took a different seat. So we could restagger the terms. That's why there was one for 1 year, one that was already 2008 to 2010, and then there were two 2010 to 2012. It's my opinion, and I believe the opinion of our council, although I don't have it in writing, I'll get it in writing, that if we were really striving for the 4-1 by the end of a term, in the original legislation that created the RRA, then they would have not staggered the terms. The staggering of the terms is specifically done to promote continuity and to not promote the appointment of an entire new board or most of a new board in a four-year period.
But I don't follow what that has to do with the minority majority. I mean, what the enabling resolution says is one member must be recommended by the minority leader. And currently we have three members on the board that were recommended by the minority party.
And you and I have spoken about this.
Yes.
And you actually thought of it more than me, always thought the appointment should be 3-2.
And I'd like to switch that. I agree with that.
Maybe we should do that before we make appointments.
Well, we have appointments right now, but I've absolutely agreed with that. We can change it. We can do whatever.
I have two other things. One, I don't think we should be voting for two people from the city of Hampstead. And no disrespect to you, Charlie, but the state legislation doesn't dictate, but it clearly says they recommend diversity throughout the county. So I'm not supporting two Kingston people. I'll tell you that right now. And I think there'll be other Democrats that won't be supporting two Kingston people. But there were two parties that I disagreed with. And I always have. And we've actually changed appointments in the past from the same towns. We changed them and made people not get, and so people know, sorry. That's one. Two is, I don't think somebody that works for a municipality who's our biggest customer should be a board member. I don't care if it's legal or not legal.
But Rich, to that, not only do we have a legal opinion on it, in fact, and you can look this up, the enabling legislation of the RA, public authorities law, specific to Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency, says that an employee of a municipality of the county shall not be deemed to be a conflict of interest. It says in the law that we can't deem it a conflict. We're not allowed to.
That's fine.
Unless he's paid more by the RRA or she is paid more by the RRA than their municipality.
Okay. So it also says you should have diversity in the county.
Yeah, it does.
You can't say we're going to go by it one time, but we're not going to go by it.
Well, the law says you should.
And my third thing is I will not support somebody who made poor decisions, in my opinion, that resulted in hundreds of thousands of dollars in lawsuit settlements.
Okay.
And will not take responsibility
for it. We're not speaking about the specific appointees names of people in front of us right now. Jeremy, that's not.
And we don't have to have the whole discussion tonight. I just wanted to make the committee aware so there was no, like, last minute, like accusations of a lot.
I hear you on that. We're not talking about specific names right now.
That's what I'm just saying.
Okay. And that's a discussion. That's why there aren't resolutions before us right now. That's something that we're working through. To the 3-2, I have advocated for that when I was first a member of the minority, then when I was a member of the majority, then when I was left a member of the minority, and I'll continue to advocate for it now. What happened last time is the committee all supported it. Your father was the one lone dissenter to changing it to 3-2, if I recall, and then that was a part of a package to changes to the RA board that got caught up in a lot of other controversy in terms of allowing legislative access.
I'm sorry, just for a historical perspective, I don't think John was against the 3-2, was he? I thought he was against other things in the past.
No, he was against the 3-2. He was against the 3-2. He said that they could all be
resolutions.
No,
it was all in the package, but he was against that too. Yeah, but that doesn't matter. The package got weighed down, not in the committee. So
that was elected officials on the board.
I would support the 3-2 because I've been on record for as long as I've been here in the 3-2. So that's something we should discuss. I think it would alleviate a lot of this confusion and tension. It never seemed fair to me in a balance, in a legislature that has a pretty fair balance. Never seemed fair that it was 4-1. Because I can't find another board that has a makeup like that.
Well, the only one that comes close is the IDA, which is 5-2.
Yeah.
I think it was originally done. The issue that I heard, obviously I wasn't right about that, was that they tried to have the makeup of the board so they could make up the legislature. But then at that time it was so far Republican that they tried to copy the money of the board, is what I was told.
That makes sense. But they should then I guess they should have
because of what you're saying now it should be 3-2 because now the legislature is evenly split. So you want the board to reflect the legislature.
Well, I don't think if there were 20 Republicans and 3 Democrats, I think you'd still think it should be 3-2. Or 20 Democrats and 3 Republicans. I don't think it should be the split of the legislature. Maybe.
Of course, he was just saying why.
That was why they did it.
Yeah.
That was
interesting. I think that's probably right, but Rich, that's my sentiment. I would still feel that way for 23 years.
If I could just say one thing, because you want to go to our website about board history, if you wonder about us, you know, to the vital things public authorities reporting. We don't have to report to public authorities, but it's something I ask you on the website. We have a board history that our my confidential secretary put together. She went through all the resolutions. Hopefully it matches the Christmas. It does. She went through all the resolutions.
Right, that's hers, let's put that right.
Because she went through all the resolutions in the agency, and it must have taken her a week to do this. Because I wanted to put together this history, and she did a phenomenal job. She has it 3 different ways where it's graphical. So you can see all the years and look each seat, who replaced each seat. She has a portion down by seat. And seat number 4, she has labeled the minority seat. That was always been the minority seat. So,
I have it in the first column. I don't have it by number, but
it's
the same information.
Oh, by the way, I'll tell Kelly that it doesn't match here. She goes, I hope everything matches. Because I know she sent it over to you. But if you go to
the website, it matches there, then it's.
Well, Chris did use theirs as a resource.
Well, his is like a minority appointment, isn't it?
Right, I understand that.
Yeah. So if you go there, you'll see it's broken down in 2 different ways. I think she did a great job of just, if you want to visually see who replaced who and set up time. And she did that, even on one thing, she even has the word, who was the executive director at the time, as well. So, feel free to take a look at that.
Okay. Any other discussion for tonight?
You'll make that available?
It's online.
It's on the website.
That's on the website.
Yeah. If you have to go to About Us and Shop, then you click on that, go up to the site, it's public authorities on 40. Click on that, and it's in that.
It's a PDF that I also saved on my computer. I can forward it. It's easier. Okay. Motion to adjourn?
So
moved. Second. All in favor?
I think that first one was saying the whole